It may surprise you to hear that over the next 10 years, demand for blood and blood products will grow by 100%, but that only 1 in 30, or 3% of Australians, actually gives blood each year. In this informative podcast, Erin Lagoudakis, the Public Affairs Officer, Victoria and Tasmania, for the Australian Red Cross Blood Service, tells us how blood donations are used.
The most common blood donation is what we call whole blood. It's pretty much the red stuff in a bag. And what happens is we actually use the main components of that, the red cells, the plasma and the platelets separately, but you just give it in one bag. Whereas the other donation types, you can actually donate plasma only, and that, you know, there's a wonderful machine in the donor centres, takes your blood out, centrifuges it, and you actually get your red cells back, your platelets back, and all we do is we keep the plasma. And then you can also do, it's a similar process, but for platelet donations as well. So there are three different types.
From a percentage perspective, which is the rarest blood group, and conversely, which is the most common?
Well, the most common is O positive, and it's a common misconception about, oh, I'm boring old O positive, you don't need my blood. Well, if it's the most common, it's the most commonly used. But then the rarest is AB negative. Only 1% of the population actually has that blood type. But then there's still rarer ones as well as that, where patients develop antibodies and that kind of thing too.
I imagine the recipients of blood donations are from all walks of life, and that their need for blood is driven by a variety of circumstances.
Absolutely. It's, again, there's another common misconception that, you know, most of the donated blood goes to help motor vehicle or road trauma victims. They actually only account for 2% of the population that uses that blood. The vast majority, 34%, is actually for cancer patients and people with blood disorders. So when you think of your family, your friends, your work colleagues, you know, the number of people you may know that have had cancer, chances are they may have used these blood products. The reality is that 1 in 3 of us are actually going to need blood in our lifetimes, and yet only 1 in 30 of us currently donate. So you don't have to be particularly good at maths to realise that those numbers don't quite add up.
Erin, tell us something about the eligibility criteria for becoming a blood donor. For example, what are the minimum and maximum ages?
If you're aged between 16 and 70, if you're feeling fit and well, you might be eligible to donate. We ask that people don't necessarily rule themselves out. A lot of people think, oh, you know, I got a tattoo. Well, you only have to wait 6 months. You know, there's a lot of people that will just say, oh, no, I can't donate because of something that happened 20 years ago. Well, don't rule yourself out. We always ask that people give us a call. The number's 13 14 95. You can have a chat with one of our trained operators and they'll be able to go through your individual circumstances, because as you well know, everyone is different and unique, and your health circumstances are different and unique. So we need to make sure that blood donation is right for you.
So anyone listening to this podcast, that really is the first step. Pick up the phone and call you.
Absolutely. You can also check out the website, which is donateblood.com.au. There's an online eligibility quiz that you can do on there as well.
Tell us something about the screening process, which I gather is pretty thorough.
Yes, you do have to fill out, I'd say it's a couple of pages long, the questionnaire, but it is there not just for the recipient's safety, so the person in hospital who is going to be receiving your blood, but also for your safety, you know, making sure that donation is actually safe for you to do as well. So it's, you know, every blood donation does get tested every single time. So even if you've been coming and donating for 20 years, every single one of those donations will have gone through the same tests.
Would that screening process, in fact, detect some irregularity in the blood of a prospective donor?
Yeah, we have had a number of donors that have discovered illnesses, you know, through the fact that they've made a blood donation, and our tests have picked up just abnormal levels, you know, white cell counts, that kind of thing. You know, certainly wouldn't use it as a screening process in lieu of regular health checks, but certainly, you know, a number of donors have actually discovered things that way.
How much blood is actually taken per donation?
It's only about a pint, you know, if you're donating the red stuff, about 470 mils. So it's not much at all, really.
Are there any adverse side effects associated with giving blood?
Hopefully there won't be any side effects, you know, provided you've prepared well. And preparation is actually a really important part of making a blood donation, making sure that you've had a good solid meal beforehand, that you've been hydrating properly, not just, you know, slamming down your 4 glasses of water immediately beforehand, but, you know, the day beforehand, you know, the morning before, making sure that you're getting a lot of fluid into you, and not just like coffee or energy drinks. We need water and juice into you to really make sure you're hydrated. So hopefully that'll allay any adverse reactions. occasionally you get people that do faint. You know, it could be more about fear of needles or fear of blood, physiological reaction. So,
how often would you call on a donor?
To make a whole blood donation, it's every 12 weeks. So 4 times a year is the most you can do, and given it only takes an hour to make a donation, it's 4 hours a year, and that's the maximum you're allowed to do. If you are doing the other donation types, like plasma or platelets, you can actually do that more regularly because you get your red cells back. So plasma is every 2 weeks, and plasma is every 2 to 4 weeks, depending on the volume that they take.
There aren't there periods or times of the year when blood donations are particularly critical?
Yeah, absolutely. So particularly for us, around public holidays, long weekends, that's when our supply of a product called platelets gets really low because they only last for 5 days. So you can imagine over a long weekend, particularly around Easter, where you don't have regular donors coming in, all the platelets, which we've taken from the whole blood donations or normal platelet donations, they will have all been used up, you know, within that time frame. And if we don't have enough coming in, more patients will go without. On top of that, winter is a very difficult time for us. Everyone gets ill with the cold or the flu. It's cold and wet and dreary outside. And because of that, our donor numbers do drop. And so we need other people who are still fit and healthy. Maybe they've just gotten back from a nice warm holiday somewhere, so they're fit and healthy. You know, we would like them to come in and help us out.
Are a greater number of people now becoming donors than they were, say, 10 years ago?
Well, it's hard to say because obviously the needs increase and the population's increase. Yes. So the percentage of the population is staying roughly the same, even though the raw numbers have increased. But certainly the demand for blood and blood products is actually increasing. Demand for plasma in particular is expected to double over the next 10 years. That's because they just keep finding amazing ways to use plasma, particularly for immune deficiencies and all that sort of stuff. And so that's going to be a really tough area for us to meet demand in.
So the demand is there, but you're worried obviously about this constant need for supply.
Absolutely.
And I suppose controversially over recent years, it's been suggested that as an incentive to encourage or attract more donors should be paid for the donations. That's not going to happen, is it?
No, it's not something that we're looking at doing in the immediate future, or not that I'm aware of at any stage. You know, the way we sort of view it is that, you know, our voluntary donors are helping us maintain the safety of our blood supply. They're not motivated by any financial gain to, you know, perhaps lie on a questionnaire or lie about, you know, any reason why they might be deferred in order to get that financial reward. So we like to think that it's actually helping to maintain the safety of our blood supply, which is the most important thing as part of what we do.
I've been talking to Erin Lagodakis from the Australian Red Cross Blood Service. If you would like to help keep the blood bank in the red by becoming a donor, please call 131495 or go to donateblood.com.au. I'm Michael Lynch. Thank you for listening to this podcast brought to you by Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives.